Missing Braves baseball? Yeah, us too. So Nick and Chris are celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Braves' 1995 World Series title as they're joined each week by a member of the 95 team.
Mark gets the sign. The wind and the pitch. Here it is. Swung. Fly ball deep left center. Grissom on the run. Yes! The Atlanta Braves have given you a championship.
Only here on the home of the Braves, The Fan.
He was the architect of that 95 championship team, that run. John Schuerholz, the Hall of Famer, joining us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. John, thanks for coming on. How are you?
I'm great. I'm happy to be here for this austere celebration of a 25th anniversary of the great 1995 World Championship.
And what a crazy year it was to start. We know that 94, there wasn't a World Series. From a management standpoint, take us through how wild that spring training was with replacement players coming back to town. Then they leave and the real players come back.
Yeah, with the, you know, the season disrupted in 94, and then we try to get back on track in 95 as an industry. And, it was a challenging. It was a lot of destabilization, if you will, with each of the 30 major league clubs and figuring out how to get ready for this season. But we did. And for us, it worked out well.
John, there was a couple of things that I was thinking about, like in terms of a chain of events and actual players on the field. You sign Maddux, you trade for McGriff, you re-sign Blauzer, you go get Marquise Grissom, and then the one that's sort of glanced over, but it is a decision. Chipper, Javi, and Klesko are going to basically be three of your starting eight going into 95. That is an incredible collection of moves made to have what happened happen.
Well, Chris, what you're talking about is a blending of what had been done by, under the leadership of then general manager Bobby Cox, as he ran the organization as general manager for 5 years, and he and Paul Snyder and the guys in the scouting and player development departments worked really hard to concentrate and on homegrown players, and they went out and got very good players. They were committed to that rather than free agent signing here, free agent signing there. Let's get the homegrown player. And all of us who have done that know that that really works if you stick to it and commit to it. And it did. And to have those kind of young players be available to plug in, as you suggested, to a championship caliber team fighting for a world championship and contributing mightily to that world championship, that's pretty darn good.
You also went out and got a veteran when the spring training with the real players resumed in Marquise Grissom. While the stats were very good, he was also that guy in the clubhouse, the backbone, some would say, was he not?
Yeah, Keith was just a remarkable guy. We were so fortunate to make that deal and get him and add him to our club. And a stabilizing player, a real pro winner in everything he does. And he added to that. We had a lot of guys like that on our club already, but to add Marquise to that. And we can't forget the Polonias and the Devereaux and Alejandro Pena, who really, really kept our back of our bullpen really strong.
John, does it feel like 25 years? I don't even know how baseball guys, when you've been in it, and by the way, you go back to the 60s with the Orioles. I don't know how you measure 1 year, 5 years, 10-year blocks, but does it feel like 25 years?
It doesn't really, Chris, because we live in the moment each and every year from the start of spring training or the off season and trades with at the winter meetings and going to spring training and building teams and putting guys together and altering how you believe your club could be made better. And you concentrate on that and you work with your staff, you work with your manager and you work with your coaches and all of that. And you just focus on that. And the years just speed by, to be quite candid. But 25 of them sped by awfully darn fast in this particular instance.
We had Greg Maddux on 2 weeks ago, and we talked about the New York Yankees Atlanta Braves thing when he was a free agent, how he was on a plane, and next thing you know, he thought he was going to New York to sign a deal. Boris says, no, it's not really done. He lands, and it's, okay, you're going to go to Atlanta. I mean, that's a pretty incredible story in terms of fates of franchises and really individuals, what baseball was sort of like. It was no cell phones. He basically said he grabbed a phone as opposed to a cell phone back then.
Well, we were right in the middle of that. Stan Kasten was our president, and I was the general manager, and we learned that Greg did not sign his contract with the Yankees, and he and his wife Kathy were on their way back to Las Vegas. And so we put a call into Boris and told him we would be very, very interested in bringing Greg to the Atlanta Braves and would like to have a meeting with him. We were in Louisville, Kentucky for the winter meetings, and Scott came to Louisville, and Stan and I, we had two suites. We had a working suite on one side of the hall and a negotiating suite on the other side of the hall. And so when Boris got into town, we sat down and were able to, carve out a deal with him, and made Maddux a Brave.
John Schuerholz with us, Hall of Famer on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line, looking back at 95 and then some as we talk some Braves and some baseball with him. We'll talk about the big picture as far as baseball is concerned this year in just a couple of seconds. I know you talked about it in your book. We've talked about it from time to time. The deal that you almost made in 92 to get Barry Bonds, how often does that cross your mind, what could have been?
No, it really doesn't, because, okay, we ended up not being able to make the deal with the Pirates, even though the deal had been agreed to. But I understand what was happening over there. The dynamics were sort of askew in that organization. But if you end up not having Barry Bonds, but because of that, you end up having Greg Maddux, that's a pretty fair trade, I think. We went after the very best offensive player, the best hitter in the game, in Bonds. We lost him because of what happened with the Pirates. And we used that money to make the signing of Greg Maddux, probably the finest free agent starting pitcher ever in the history of the game.
And then you go get another power bat, McGriff. I don't know if you do the McGriff deal. You know, you'd like to say, of course, that deal would have been done, but you get the power bat in Fred McGriff as well.
Well, when you talk to general managers all of the time, you know who's like leaning forward, ready to make a deal, wanting to make a deal. And I knew what we needed. We all knew, Bobby and I especially knew what we needed. We needed another power bat and another great guy in the clubhouse, no better than Freddie Mac. He's just remarkable. And so we made that deal, and it really solidified our team, really, really solidified the middle of our lineup.
You surprised he's not in the Hall of Fame? Do you think he should be in the Hall of Fame? Do you think he gets into the Hall of Fame, Fred McGriff?
I say yes to all of those questions. I'm not surprised he's not there yet, because Freddie, was just a consistent guy. Not just, he was a very consistent, productive player on both sides of the ball, offense and defense. Great in the clubhouse, and his stats match up pretty well to some people who are already in the Hall of Fame. And I think he deserves a lot of consideration. I really do believe that.
John, you know what?
Like Teddy Simmons. Teddy Simmons, the guy who was the general manager of the Pirates when we were talking about this deal, and it fell through with Bonds. He got within one vote of being elected by the writers a couple of years ago, and he failed, and he didn't get in. And I thought, my God, here's a guy that deserved to be in a Hall of Fame for sure. But it happens sometimes. And if they're good enough, they'll come back up with a veterans committee, and they'll have a chance.
John, do you know what does look 25 years, maybe 50 years ago? It's funny. They're obviously showing the World Series this week, and I know that you've got a series on the Braves channel on YouTube called The Architect. If people want to actually, you talk about Bobby Cox and all these deals, and it's sort of a multi-part series. But when I look at the locker room in Fulton County Stadium, it looks like, hell, I've been in minor league facilities and spring training facilities. This looks like cheap IKEA. It looks like they took white slapboard and said, here you go, here's a locker room. It's crazy when you look back 25 years ago with the evolution of from West Palm Beach, from Fulton County Stadium, to what baseball now has in terms of all the amenities around it.
Well, thank God it all was for the better. We moved forward. We moved upward. We enhanced our organization. We enhanced our facilities. We enhanced the way we operate. And we continue to do that today under the baseball leadership of Alex Anthopoulos and his guys. Just grinding and grinding and grinding with a chance almost every year. You turn the calendar to January 1. You feel good about this organization's chance to put a competitive, if not a winning team on the field with a chance to get in the postseason and maybe win another World Series.
I'm
really confident about the way these guys are.
Well,
working.
It's interesting, because I do know this, being around in the early to mid 90s into the 2000s. If things were being equal, look, certainly how many years and how much money is going to be a big play in free agency. But being equal, there was a want to come play for Bobby Cox in this Atlanta Braves organization. That was a real thing in free agency.
Well, that's true. When we went from worst to first in 91, I mean, they had finished last, the Braves had finished last three previous years. But when we turned it around, the whole organization, Bobby and I and scouts and coaches and everybody, turned it around and went from worst to first. It signaled to the baseball world and to our fans and to the people who are serious about looking at our team. And then we win. We go off on that 14 consecutive division championship. Everybody in baseball, Chris, when you see a team, an organization, I should say, do that and work together like Bobby and I did and our coaches and our scouts and all that. I mean, and 14 division championships in a row, never been done before, never will be done again. So that signaled to the people that folks in Atlanta are working the way you need to work if you want to sustain yourself in an excellent fashion. And we try to do that every year.
Hall of Famer John Schuerholz with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. You talk about that worst to first journey. Everybody still says to a man, or the majority of people, that 91 team will always have a special place in their hearts because they shocked the world. As an organization, now, I'm not saying you saw worst to first, but did you see the light at the end of the tunnel prior to that 91 season?
Well, not really, because when I came here, there was a lot of work to be done, and we went out, as you guys both know, we signed a lot of free agents, but that we needed to create a defensive team that would supplement the great young pitching we had. They would make good pitch after good pitch. A ball would go through her legs, a pit ball would be thrown into the stands, we'd go over an outfielder's head. So we did. My view, and I shared it with Bobby and Stan Castle, my view was that we need to fix their defense and just go with the young guys we have pitching and supplement it from year after year after year. And that's how it began, and it sustained itself all the way through the run.
I want to ask you about both Bobbies. We actually talked to some players about Bobby in the media, no doubt about it, sticking up for his players, getting thrown out of games, not because, look, he was doing it a lot of times to make sure the player didn't get thrown out of the game. But before we ask you about Bobby, I want to ask you about Bobby Dews real quick. I'm not sure if enough people, if there's a generation of people who actually understand what Bobby Dews in and around this organization. I still in my mind's eye see, however old he was, running around the stadium, running in the stadium. Bobby Dews was, you know, if you're going to put a face on baseball for a while in terms of guys you wanted to have a conversation with, Bobby Dews was one of those guys.
Bobby Dews was one of my real great friends when I came over here to the Braves. I didn't know him then, but I learned to know him. We'd go out and have coffee, we'd go out and have tea. He'd go to these beautiful hotels, the Algonquin Hotel in New York, especially where the artists and the writers would meet and all of that. He was really a Renaissance man, and he was a very, very good baseball person. He, in fact, when we played the game, the Hall of Fame game in Cooperstown, in which my son was declared the most valuable player, Jonathan, Bobby Dews caught the first two innings of that game. Caught the first two innings in a major league game, in an exhibition game in Cooperstown. I mean, he was a delightful guy, a wonderful man. I miss him dearly every day, but he was a great friend and a real, real asset to the Braves organization.
And a Georgia man through and through in every sense of the word.
Absolutely.
Yeah, as
absolutely.
A tech guy, but from the state of Georgia. So now let me ask you about Bobby Cox. And Bobby on his... I don't know. Look, it was the other day. Who the hell was it was telling us that he came into the room and there was a coffee mug stuck on the wall? Oh, it was Ned Yost.
Yep.
When he said Bobby had his moment in the office, he didn't do it out there for the public. He didn't do it out there for everybody. He certainly didn't do it to the newspaper people. But when he'd have his moment in the office or he'd had his moment in that clubhouse, legendary, just in terms of a guy who would stick up for you publicly, but make sure a foot got put up a rear end whenever
but
it needed
But then it was
be.
Forgotten about just as quickly.
I was in a number of, as a general manager, of course, and Bobby would always invite me to be there. I was in a number of post-game meetings where a player did not live up to the expectations of our skipper. And, I knew what was coming. And he'd say, come on, John, come in. I got so-and-so coming in. And he would, in his very, very direct and very clear and very stern and consistent manner, let that individual know that is not the way you handle being an Atlanta Brave. That is not the way you act. That is not the way you conduct yourself. Get out of here. I never want to see you in this office again. If I do, you won't be around. I was in there, and that's what he did. But he didn't demean people. He was just angry because somebody let down that our organization by the way they did not reflect what we stood for. And Bobby would not stand for that.
We've asked the players about this, the coaches about this. We'll ask you about it, Hall of Famer John Schuerholz, with us looking back at that 95 championship team as he joins us on the Loud Security Systems newsmaker line. When the dog pile's on the field, when everybody's celebrating, what do you feel as the GM? Is it relief? Is it validation? Is it all of the above?
Excitement, celebration, hallelujah. I mean, because it was a great turnaround. Let's face it. It was a great turnaround of an organization that, you know, had some tough times. But we started and we continued with it and we worked together side by side, Bobby and I, shoulder to shoulder in a great partnership for 17 years, he and I and the coaches and the executives and scouting people and player development people. And it was just real, real joyful. I mean, to climb the top of the mountain and become world champions after where we started and what we knew the challenges were for this organization. And when I took it, I knew them. But I believed it was the right place to be, and with the right leadership and the right programs, we could become champions. And 14 consecutive division championships, and then a World Series in 95, and here we are.
John, I don't want to bring up sort of what the mess of baseball has been with the Astros and the Red Sox, but I will tell you, in my mind, your ability to walk by that trophy, wherever it is you have it placed in the stadium, the miniature trophies that everybody gets. Mm-hmm. I was really insulted a few months ago when it was sort of, oh, wait, it's just, and it was the commissioner who just said, oh, it's a thing. That is not a thing. And I know that he corrected himself after that point. But can you explain what it's like to walk by or see that, your version of it or the big boy version of it?
Well, no, my version of it is the same as anyone who puts their blood, sweat, and tears and makes and dedicates themselves to building on a consistent basis excellent organizations and excellent teams with the hope of someday becoming world champions. That's what all general managers do, or presidents or managers. That's what we all do. And so when you see that trophy, or when it's in your home or it's in your office and you walk by it, your heart takes a special beat. That means everything in the world to we competitors and we builders and the people who put their blood, sweat, and tears into this every day to do what that means is to accomplish the very highest goal in all of our business, and that is to become world champions. And that's what we go to work for every year, Chris.
Yeah, the Hall of Fame thing, because it's very funny, that dinner at the Hall of Fame where it's the most exclusive room in the history of sports. It's the velvet rope, and it only gets lifted. I don't care who you are. I don't care who you're married to. I don't care who your kids are. It doesn't happen. Can you explain what it's like? You had been in contact with probably everybody who'd been in that room. You had talked to and been in the presence of everybody who was in that room. But this is a different night. That door opens, that velvet rope sort of gets pulled aside. And, yes, sir, please, table for Mr. Schuerholz.
It's a different night, especially when you are presented to come to the front of the room. Now you've got a whole room full of living Hall of Famers and people that you idolize, that I idolize, and I tried to make trades for and tried to acquire and sign some and develop some. And all of a sudden they say, John Schuerholz, please come to the front desk. And the presentation of your Hall of Fame ring and your ability to speak from your heart about how this feels and what it means to you and your family and your loved ones and your organizations is unparalleled, Chris. Unparalleled.
We would be remiss if we didn't ask you, knowing there's no definitive right way to answer it, but we need to ask anyway, your thoughts on baseball coming back.
Well, I hope we do. I mean, it's a wonderful sport, but listen, a pandemic came rolling through our country for the first time ever in my lifetime, and I'm only 79 years old. But, I mean, and we had to deal with that, and we're still trying to deal with that and try to figure out how to keep people safe and open up the economy and get people back to work and keep people from getting ill and dying. That's difficult. That's a real, real difficult circumstance. It's unique, and you can't blame anybody for this. It was a pandemic, a cloud of evil disease come rolling through our world. And I hope we work our way out of it. I hope there's some way we can confidently and appropriately balance those issues with the hopefulness of getting baseball back for our fans, and so that we can at least leave them this year with remembering what baseball is, how great it is, how wonderfully talented our players are, and what it means to them and their families and their communities. I hope we can get that done.
All right, John, let's finish up with this. We have asked everybody this same thing as well. It's a little bit different for you. Is there a, again, it's the infamous, let's preface it with, is it sort of like asking who your favorite child is? If you have an answer to that, we'll certainly take that one as well. But is there a player that you had a greater affinity for from everybody else, like a guy that you just really enjoyed, maybe a tick more than others? And here's the follow-up. Now that I think the tampering thing is, the statute of limitations is probably gone, is there a guy that you wished or a guy that you coveted more than any other that you couldn't land?
Well, that's a two-part question. I've had so many wonderful players who played the game well, who had great demeanor, who had great character, starting with Brooks Robinson, who I was a young executive in 1966 when I joined the Baltimore Orioles. And to this day, he still remains a dear friend of mine. And what a great guy. Al Kaline, who was my dear friend from Baltimore also, who just passed away. Those are the kind of people that play the game well, succeed at the game, are champions at the game, and champions as people representing the game and also representing their families. And there's more like that. I can't mention them all. I mean, George Brett was in that category. Chipper Jones, a great player in that category. There's a lot of them, and I was blessed to be a part of teams where they were, and I got to know them all.
The Hall of Fame career speaks for itself. John Schuerholz, always an honor and a pleasure having you on the show. Congratulations on everything, and hopefully we'll see you at the ballpark in the not-too-distant future.
Let's hope so. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, John.
John Schuerholz, Hall of Famer, joining us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker Line.